Seventh case for this morning is United States v. White. Mr. Green.
May it please the court.
Counsel.
Terry Green for the defendant appellant Jason White. Jason White was on parole from the Illinois Department of Corrections. He was ultimately indicted on the charge of possession with a felon, possession of a firearm, and felon in possession of ammunition after jury trial was found guilty of the possession by a felon of a firearm and found not guilty of the ammunition charge and sentenced to 360 months in jail in the Bureau of Prisons. Prior to trial, there was hearings held, two-day hearing on defendant's motion to suppress the search, which had resulted in the finding of the firearm, which was the gravamen, as it were, of the government's case against Jason.
Now, let me tell you how I see this case. It appears to me that the district court, resolved at the suppression hearing the question whether Williams consents to the search of the car and resolves it in favor of the consent, that valid consent was given. I understand your argument is that doesn't get you inside the duffel bag, but to get inside the duffel bag, you have the fact that he's a parolee and that he has, in fact, consented to the search of his personal property in that. So I see it as almost a two-stage process, that you can get into the car because the judge resolves on the facts the validity of Williams' consent. You don't have to have her consenting to the bag because he's already consented.
Well, Judge, in the district judge's decision, he makes reference that under the mandatory supervised release agreement, which parolees sign as a part of their release from the Department of Corrections, there is a statement in there that they will consent to searches at all times.
Right, and the Supreme Court in the Sampson case said that's okay.
Well, the way that we read the Sampson case, Your Honor, is that it says that neither the mandatory supervised release, and making reference to other cases, there being the Wilson case that was cited, and I believe Moss says that the MSR is not to be considered as consent into the future, that you still have to look at the issue of the reasonableness.
Well, but what's unreasonable? I mean, so the court is leaving a door open for a particular warrantless search of a parolee that might be, for some reason, so outrageous that it's not reasonable. But the facts here look a lot like the facts in Sampson. As I said, if we can agree that we're focusing on the search of the bag, then it's hard for me to see why that's any different or worse, or why that could be in any way regarded as unreasonable given the consent in the MSR.
We had also mentioned in each of these cases, it talks about how obviously people who are not under a sentence, then we have probationers and we have parolees, and there's kind of a continuum of what people have as far as Fourth Amendment protections. In the each instance, they say, well, defendants, parolees particularly, they have a much lesser recognized Fourth Amendment right, but they still have something. And all the cases make reference to that. And then the question is, well, what you keep, the courts keep saying that they still have some Fourth Amendment, but they don't get around to saying what it is. The only time that they end up doing that I was able to find were the two cases that we cited, is like the LaFleur case and then the...
But in Coleman and LaFleur, you have different situations, like
yes,
the officers not knowing that the suspect is on parole, and the GPS situation of Jones, which obviously we're still in the process of working out. Parolees are in a an intermediate position in our system. You don't have to let people out on parole, and surely they're better off on parole with these search conditions than they would be behind bars.
Yes, Your Honor. Our point being is that the instances, Samson and the others, were instances where the defendant was present at the time that the search is conducted. In our case, we presented the evidence of Tawana Williams, the cousin of the defendant, showing that what the circumstances were of this search.
So explain to me what difference you think it would have made if Mr. White had been present at the time they leave the house and head off to the car.
Well, in the the point that we were seeking is showing that just having no limitations whatsoever on the Fourth Amendment interest of a parolee, which was argued by the government in LaFleur or in the Coleman case, and it made reference to the potential of abuses in those instances. In our case, we believe that the search that went on prior to the time that he was found was a rather heated circumstance. As the court said, the evidence was that they had to be, his cousin had to be told to settle her mother down. Would it have made a difference? We believe that it would have made a difference, at least when the defendant's there, that there's some limitation on the actions of the police officer. In this instance, it appeared that the police were going to do anything.
Well, let me ask you about that, because I understand the Illinois Supreme Court to have read the specific language of the MSR as saying this is not prospective consent. Instead, they're drawing the distinction and saying this is an obligation to give consent in the future, right?
Yes, sir.
And you're saying that couldn't happen because he wasn't present.
Yes, sir.
He is, however, at this point, a fugitive suspected of shooting two people armed. There's an arrest warrant out for him. And if they had gotten a hold of him and brought him to the scene, he would have had an obligation to consent, right? Under the MSR.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Why should he be better off because he successfully eludes the police at that point?
Well,
why does he have more Fourth Amendment rights?
Well, we think that in the finding of having a limitation of the action against the parolee or probation or anybody else on this continuum, that at least in the cases that we've seen is that they were instances of people were there, and I don't believe that it's couched in whether or not he's better off because he's out running around.
So. But that's the consequence of what you're arguing, isn't it?
Well, I guess in the final analysis, that would be the result.
You're in your rebuttal time.
Okay. I'll reserve that. I'm sorry.
If you'd like to save it, that would be fine. Thank you. Mr. Clark.
Good morning, Your Honors. The issue here is really controlled by the mandatory supervised release agreement. As you indicated, Judge, the release to begin with was conditioned on the fact that he signed this mandatory supervised release agreement. And because he's done that, he essentially has given up any expectation of privacy that he may have in his effects.
But are you then reading the release more broadly than the Illinois Supreme Court would read it, as consent in advance to searches, whether he's present, whether he's not present, no matter what the time of day, no matter what the circumstances?
Well, I believe, Your Honor, as Judge Hamilton indicated, that the court in Illinois made reference to the fact that this was an obligation of the defendant to consent. So fundamentally...
Let me run a concept by you to see if I understand what the Illinois Supreme Court is saying here. I understand them to be saying, well, in this kind of situation where he's not actually given consent for this specific search, we're not going to treat it as a consent search. Instead, we're going to do this in a two-step process. He has a legal obligation to remain, if he wants to remain free, he's got a legal obligation to give consent under such circumstances. Hence, his Fourth Amendment expectations of privacy diminish to perhaps the vanishing point remains to be seen, so that's why we think this is a reasonable search.
That's correct.
You read it that way?
And yes, sir. And ultimately, what we're trying to decide here, I think, is the reasonable expectation of privacy. And how can it possibly be that he would have a reasonable expectation of privacy when he has signed that mandatory supervised release agreement? I mean, how can it?
Could you speak up, please?
Yes, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm having trouble.
Oh, do you want some water? You can
no, that's okay. may I bring the microphone closer?
I think that will help our recording. I'm not sure.
Okay, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Ultimately, as I started to say before, Your Honors, the ultimate issue here is whether the search was reasonable and also whether or not the defendant had a reasonable expectation of privacy in the bag once he has signed that agreement.
So how important, in your view, are the background facts that Judge Hamilton mentioned a minute ago, the fact that a shooting victim had identified White as the assailant, they thought he was armed and dangerous, he seems to be evading them.
Sure. As the government indicated in its brief, the alternative for upholding the decision, Your Honors, is that there were exigent circumstances for the search. That is, the defendant was on the loose. He was wanted, as you indicated, on a warrant for arrest for a violation of his release. The police knew that he had shot one person. The bullet went through that person's abdomen and grazed the leg of the second victim. And there were other violations of of his conditions of supervised release. They're not terribly important. The main thing is that he had shot two people and was running from the police. So the primary reason for looking in the bag, according to the officer, was to see if he could find any records that might indicate, any kind of evidence that might indicate how to locate the defendant. And so I believe that exigent circumstances justify the search, even if the consent search doesn't. So as a result, Your Honors, I would ask that you affirm the decision of the district court.
All right, thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Green?
Your Honor, on the issue of the exigent circumstance, I believe it was brought out at the hearing that the warrant, the parole warrant for Jason White had been issued 2 days previously and no steps had been taken to locate him. The shooting to which counsel made reference had occurred approximately 2 weeks prior to that time, and no charges have ever been filed against Mr. White. So the issue of whether or not there were exigent circumstances of trying to locate Mr. White were at least in some question. We believe that the statement of the court that you waive because you sign an MSR is against at least the holding we read, at least the law is described in the Sampson decision. We think the issue is one, as the courts have said, is a totality of circumstances. And the totality of circumstances in this instance would be that the defendant had at least a modicum of some type of Fourth Amendment rights that have been recognized, and that the court should have granted the motion to suppress.
Thank Mr. Green, excuse me, but how recently had the victims of the shooting identified Mr. White as the shooter?
If my memory serves me, that it was a couple days after there were two people that were hit. One did not identify Mr. White. One identified Mr. White, and I want to say it was like within 24 hours or so
of
the shooting. Identified him by his nickname, didn't know his real name, but the police were able to put that together in short order. But I want to say the shooting was 2 weeks before the issue with the bag. I could be mistaken. I believe that's about right.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. And you were appointed, and we appreciate very much your assistance to your client and to the court.
Thank you.
And thanks as well to the government. The case